You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
David Lindsay Abaire won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama in 2007 for Rabbit Hole. His latest play is Good People, set in the working-class neighborhood in South Boston, where it seems luck may be the deciding factor as to who gets out and who gets stuck there forever. It's on stage at Manhattan Theater Club's Samuel J. Friedman Theater, and the reviews have been great. Ben Brantley of the New York Times called it one of the more subtly surprising treats of this theater season. I'm very pleased to welcome the playwright, as well as two of its stars, Tate Donovan and Estelle Parsons, to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going okay. So far, anyway. Let's see what I feel in about 15, 20 minutes. David, the play is all about South Boston, or Southie, the people who live there, their accents, the mostly dead-end jobs available to them. Why did you want to set the play there? Did you grow up there?
I did, yeah. I spent my whole life there. My mother grew up there. My father grew up there. I knew the people incredibly well, and I knew that I wanted to write about it for a long time. The other thing was I kept hearing about British playwrights writing about class, where the American playwrights about class, and I thought, all right, I'm going to step up and finally write that play.
But there have been other books about the area from writers like Dennis Lehane and both Andre Debuse's Michael Patrick McDonald movies, mm-hmm. Good Will Hunting, The Departed, The Town most recently. Is it all because this is one of the best places to write, to deal with class in America?
Well, it's a very insular community. It's a very working class community. A lot of the books and movies that you just listed write a lot about crime and the mob and drugs and that sort of thing.
And you mentioned Whitey Bulger in the play.
In passing, it's certainly not what the play's about. Not a lot of those books and movies are about class per se. It's more about the underbelly of the city, which always makes a very good story.
Can we set up the plot quickly for those people who have not seen it?
Sure. It's about a middle-aged woman who has worked minimum wage jobs for most of her life, and she loses her job at the dollar store at the top of the play and finds herself in very dire straits. And someone mentions this guy that she grew up with who had made it out of the neighborhood. And in the course of the play, she insinuates herself into his life.
Are there a lot of women like Margie in Southie?
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, these are people that I knew incredibly well and know incredibly well. They're in my family. They were my neighbors. They didn't do the specific things that this character does in the play, but this type of person I know incredibly well.
Estelle, we last saw you on Broadway as the drug-addicted matriarch Violet Weston in August Osage Counties. And here you're playing Margie's landlady, Dottie, who keeps threatening to throw her out if she falls behind in the rent. But do you see her as a sweetheart compared to Violet?
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to be in a fun play. That one was a killer. But this is really fun, you know, for one's spirit.
Well, didn't you grow up in the Boston area? Although,
oh, yeah,
not
I grew
Southie.
Up in Marblehead.
Now, what?
I didn't really
where
know
Marblehead
anybody in
relationship
Southie,
to
but
them?
I knew people from Revere, which was another kind of very low-class place. But what did you think of Revere? No, not like Southie, right?
No, Revere was similar. It was very similar. It was also working class. Revere was also on the beach in Southie. It's a similar type of place.
Would the accents be similar?
Certainly Revere and Southie are very similar, yeah.
Now, Tate, didn't you appear in Rabbit Hole in the Los Angeles production?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that where you and David met?
No, we never met David. We worked every day. We were wondering what David Lindsay Abaire was like, you know. What would he think of our production? He never came out and saw it. We were devastated.
You were not.
We were.
I was up to my neck in another show. I was desperate.
David, how are you handling the resentment?
David.
No, we weren't devastated, but we actually, it was great because we didn't have to actually say the lines. You know, it's very difficult. Now I have to actually, he comes every day and I have to actually say the lines he's written.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
You could make up whatever you want.
Yeah, in L.A.,
to
we just, whatever we did, we just.
Well, yeah, in L.A., most of the actors come out of the movies and they probably can't remember half the lines. They say,
true.
Can we do another take
that's
on that?
Not true. Amy Ryan was the lead, and she was great, and she comes out. You know, most actors these days do television, film, theater, whatever gets you through the night. I mean, it's not like,
it's not the great divide that everybody says.
Yeah, it's not the great divide.
In the old days, there was definitely there were distinctions made, and you were a traitor if you were a film actor and you went on television in the early days of TV. Now, the whole thing is so fluid.
Yeah, thank God. Thank God.
You're playing Mike Dillon, a high school classmate and former boyfriend of Margie's, who has become a successful doctor and now lives in Chestnut Hill. Now, that's an upscale suburb.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of have made it out.
Is he like anyone you knew? Grew up with?
Yes. He's a lot like my dad. My dad grew up in a bad section of Brooklyn. His parents never made it into high school. They had an almost no education, and he became a doctor. And his sort of relationship with his old Brooklyn neighborhood and his old roots are kind of similar to Mikey Dillon's, in that he has a nostalgia for it, but really does not want to spend any time there.
But you also grew up in an Irish family.
Yeah,
I don't know how important that is for an actor.
Yeah, it's pretty important to get the humor of the sort of certain Irish slagging that we like to do, you know, just sort of ripping into each other constantly. I think my family spent a lot of time doing it.
David, you've spoken about the fact that you got a scholarship to a prep school when you were 11. Was that your ticket out of Southie?
Oh, yeah, no question. Yeah, I got on the train every day, headed out to the suburbs to Milton Academy, which is a fantastic school, but of course rubbed elbows with people from a different class, from, you know, that went places that I had and got an education that I couldn't have gotten anywhere else. And at the end of every day, I would go back to Southie, and so I had both feet planted firmly in both worlds, but didn't really belong entirely to either one.
So I'm assuming that although Mike isn't the hero of this play, to some degree, his experience is closest to yours.
On the surface, it is. I mean, certainly his relationship with the neighborhood is completely different from my relationship. He's very ambivalent about his feelings about the neighborhood and where he came from and his relationship with luck. I'm incredibly proud of my background and where I came from, and am very much aware of luck playing an important part of my trajectory.
And luck is a key factor here, as I mentioned earlier. That seems to be the way that with class, especially, that's the way you break free, some lucky break.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it does feel like a trap.
Well, it doesn't. You can't take hard work out of the equation. It's not purely a case of luck. But, you know, there's that Sam Goldwyn quote, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And you need luck. It's not just working hard. There's this American myth that everybody that works incredibly hard can accomplish anything. That's not true. You have to have opportunity and luck in the mix.
The accents are really important here. Estelle, how different is the Southie accent from the Marblehead accent?
I have no idea.
are you just returning to the old one?
I don't know what happened. I started working on it, and it started coming out in an accent, so that's what I do.
Mm. Well, did you have accent coaches here?
I didn't.
Coaches?
We had dialect coaches. Yeah,
they worked. Did,
Charlotte
but I didn't.
Fleck. She's great. She's great.
Well, because Estelle had this Marblehead accent, which was certainly a Massachusetts accent, and Dottie's background was mysterious and enigmatic enough that there's not a lot of evidence that Dottie necessarily grew up in the neighborhood. So we thought this is a landowner. She maybe came from a different part of the state.
But I think there's along with the accent goes this thing about slurring all the words together.
Mm-hmm.
Which seemed to come a lot with me in this play. So, you know, I just kind of do what comes out of me. I'm a great believer in my unconscious.
Well, actors often have to unlearn the accent that they grew up with. But is there fear that you'll slip back into the
old? I had unlearned mine a big way when I went off to boarding school. It was very hard when we first started this for me to say can't anymore because Kant's always the big thing that once you're out of New England, people kind of look at you if you're being pretentious, you know.
I'm saying Kant.
So I had to really learn not to say Kant. And so when we started this, I said to the dialect woman, I have to say Kant. And she said, well, you can split the difference. But I didn't know what that meant, so I gave up.
You didn't have to say pack the car. So
pack the car, not pack the car, pack the car.
Pack the car. Tell you about it, pack the car.
In your case, Tate, you probably needed a whole education.
I needed an entire team of experts flown in from
let me tell you something about him. He's absolutely fantastic at accents in every single show he's ever done.
Oh, thank you.
He's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was the day that Tate found it in his mouth, and that was it. It wasn't Yeah. It's just amazing.
Well, he's really amazing. David is our, he's sort of like our darling. Every once in a while, he'll just come up and say, hey, you know, he's got the best Southie accent. So.
But you have the most tricky accent problem here because you have to slip into a more educated accent. After all, you you're in both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the kids from my neighborhood, Williamsburg, and then Bed-Stuy. Who can speak one way, and then when they go back, they're suddenly talking a little different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we the first 2 weeks, I had no accent whatsoever, and then only a couple of times with Maggie, who, by the way, is played amazingly well by Frances McDormand.
And you believe her accent
from the moment she says
her first word.
Yeah.
Is she from Boston?
No, she's just a master at accents.
She's from Minnesota, isn't she? Or is that just where?
Pennsylvania, I think, right?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
I guess I've associated with Fargo. So
yeah, right.
She's from Fargo.
Well, she's from, like all good actors, she's from wherever she's playing.
Exactly right.
Yeah. She hasn't seen Mike for 30 years, and she goes asking for a job. At first, we feel like she's being kind of pushy until eventually we realize that there's more to their relationship than we first thought. So when Mark comes back into his life, your character is not too happy.
Well, I mean, you know, could you imagine if someone came into the radio station and was like, hey, I really want to get into radio. I have no jobs. I've got no skills. How do I do it? Come on, give me a job. You know, and you're like, hey.
That happens all the time.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. And so I'm a doctor and I just don't know what to do. I haven't seen her in 30 years. Sure, it's great to see her, but this is just an uncomfortable situation.
And then she calls him. Lace curtain Irish.
Right.
What does that term mean? Is that considered an insult?
It's an incredibly complicated phrase, but usually it's, yes, used as an insult. It means somebody that was from the neighborhood that has escaped the neighborhood and gained money, position, and
taking on airs.
Pretensions.
Yeah.
So it's in the play, it's used as a backhanded compliment. She's like, no, it's great that you're lace curtain. It means, you know, you did good. Yeah. And he says, it doesn't mean it means I think I'm better than other people.
And I think my character is very concerned with being authentic and being from, you know, part of his mythology is he's come out from this terrible neighborhood and he's pulled himself up by the bootstraps and he's this great success. But he's still with the people, you know. And so when she comes in and says, oh, you're all lace curtain, you're, you know, full of it.
And when she tells him that luck has been a major part
of
his success, he doesn't like that either because he feels like, as you say, he pulled himself up by his bootstraps.
Yeah, I can't.
She knows which buttons to push.
She does.
You know, I think that this play is different from all that other stuff about Southie because he's really trying to, I think, deal with the fact that there is not a communication between even a middle class and people who are living in this poverty zone. There is a huge class difference in this country, and we cannot relate to people who are outside our class, partly because we don't want to if we're middle class or upper middle class.
There are resentments
and
the
fears. Other people are trying to relate to us, maybe, or maybe they don't want to either. But I think he's dealing about something that hasn't really been dealt with in the theater. And that's why I wanted to be a part of it, because I think that people need to see that and they need to understand that they don't properly open up to people of the other classes in this country. Everybody, and particularly in New York, if you ask me, they're so hermetically sealed into who and what they are with all their friends who are in the exact same thing. So I think it's a terribly important play that way. Of course, I don't see it, so I hope it's just making that point.
You're in the middle of it.
People who do see it. Well, I'm just acting in it, so it's different from, you know, seeing a play or knowing it.
What about the title, Good People? Is that a Southie expression?
Yeah, it usually describes someone who is salt of the earth, who does good things. Yeah, he's good people, she's good people. And it's used, you know, to mean that in the play, but it's also used ironically. The play asks what makes a good person, who is a good person. I think all of these people define themselves as good people, and by the end of the play, maybe re-examine who they are and who they were and what that means to be a good person.
My guests are David Lindsay-Abaire, whose latest play is called Good People. And also with us are two of the stars of the play, Tate Donovan and Estelle Parsons. It's being produced these days at the Manhattan Theater Club's Samuel J. Friedman Theater on West 47th Street. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're talking about Good People, a hit play now at the Manhattan Theater Club's Samuel J. Friedman Theater with the playwright David Lindsay-Abaire and two of its stars, Tate Donovan and Estelle Parsons. And it must just be feel wonderful when you get the kinds of reviews that you've been getting, David, pretty much for all of your things from – I guess from Fuddy Meyers on, no?
They've all been spectacular, every review.
Well, we know that not every reviewer loves everything that you do. But
no, of course not.
I remember when Fuddy Meyers came out and suddenly people were talking about you and it must have changed your life. And then the Pulitzer Prize for Rabbit Hole.
It's nice when they like it, yes, of course. I've been very lucky. Talking about luck, I mean, you know, the reviews are also in that mix in terms of my life.
And has it affected your career? When you win the Pulitzer, does it really mean anything other than when you send another play to somebody that you're sure they'll read it?
Oh, gosh. I mean, yeah, it means a tremendous amount. It's a great honor, of course. And people's perceptions of you change, and the perception, not always, but they can change. I mean, at the end of the day, I still have to, of course, get up and work and write, and that hasn't changed at all. The process of writing is exactly the same. So, but it's helped, of course.
Estelle, did winning the Oscar for supporting actress in Bonnie and Clyde lead to all the parts you always wanted to have?
It led to an awful lot I didn't want to have. No, I mean, you know, I have a funny career. I kind of do what I want to do. And so nothing seems to lead to anything. But it does sort of give a stamp of approval. You know, if you say you're an actress, but if you say you've won the Academy Award, they know you really can probably act pretty well. And I'm sure the Pulitzer does the same thing. Like, I know friends of mine have won it. And that wouldn't be you, David. But, you know, writers, and they say, oh, she won a Pulitzer. You think, oh, well, you know, they've got some kind of sense of life in the world, and they're using it. So.
Like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval.
Yeah, right. Those things matter as you go through life.
Well, it also depends on what you won the Oscar for. There are some people who probably shouldn't have won them, but when you say Bonnie and Clyde, that is still a classic film.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience, yeah.
And that was fairly early in your career?
Well, I'm a theater actress, really. I only did that movie because of Arthur Penn, whom I'd been working with in the theater and totally devoted to his working methods. So I was sort of at the height of my excitement about acting at the time, and it was a wonderful experience. But that movie pushed a button around the world that was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, because very few movies can do that.
Hmm. Tate, you haven't won an Oscar yet. What's
I have
wrong?
No awards whatsoever. I think being on
You've
your
won
show
my heart,
is
my heart.
this is the
award.
Beginning of something big.
Yeah, this is the beginning of my campaign.
But you have a wonderful resume.
Oh, thank you.
People
would
keep
you
on
like
hiring you.
Let's read it out loud. What do you say?
And by the way, you have an incredible director here, Daniel Sullivan.
Oh, such a great director. What a great guy. And
also, another character in an odd way is the set. John Lee Beatty has done something amazing because when you wrote this, David, you must have been aware that you were creating scenes in so many different settings that it was going to cause real problems for the stage crew and the set designer.
Yeah, I should think about those things, but I don't.
Don't writers think about that?
Of course, sometimes you don't want it to be impossible. But at the same time, I've been incredibly lucky with the designers that I've worked with. They always solve those problems and bring life to the play in a way that I could never have imagined. The set, for Good People in particular, the scenes that are in Southie, the locations are small and tight and a little run down. And so that when we finally go to Mike's home in the second act, the curtain opens and gets wider and wider and wider, and you see this luxurious expanse of space that you have not seen in South Boston, you understand the play in a very specific way because of John Lee Beatty and what he's done with the set.
And there we meet another very important part of this cast, Renee Elise Goldsberry. She's playing Mike's wife, Kate, an African-American lawyer who comes from an upper-middle-class background. Actually, when it comes to class here, she is the one who's had probably the best background of all of the characters in the play.
Yeah. Renee is an amazing actress. You know, the moment she opens her mouth, you just know who she is. And her relationship with Francis right from the start at the door when she enters is just – it's fantastic.
So you were looking, David, I'm sure, for more complications, the whole idea of injecting race into a play that's largely about class,
yeah,
because we often associate the two.
Well, I mean, also, South Boston is such a complicated area and has such a complicated semi-dark history with race. It would be irresponsible of me to write about South Boston and not include race somehow in the play.
Because that's where the big busing crisis.
Exactly, right, the forced busing issue and all that stuff that was going on in the 70s and continued to go on for many years later. You know, at the end of the day, the play is not about class of – I mean about race, but it is in the stew and informs the characters in very specific ways.
I would say it's as much about playing bingo as anything. Marky and her friends seem to spend much of their time playing bingo, which seems to be a metaphor for life in the neighborhood and the fact that people have to rely on luck.
Right.
To win.
Yes. Waiting for their numbers to come up, yeah.
And we should point out that there's a lot of comic relief in this story. Estelle, you must have been pleased you get a good share of the funny lines.
I love it. I love to be funny. I'm trying hard not to be, and that makes it even funnier, I guess.
Does a story like this need comedy to keep it from becoming grim?
I think so. I mean, more to the point for me is I was just writing about the people that I knew, and everybody in South Boston, pretty much to a person, is incredibly funny and uses humor in a very specific way. It's so part of the fabric of the community. And, you know, they laugh in the face of adversity, and they're incredible storytellers. And if I was being truthful in writing about the people that I knew, inevitably there has to be comedy in it. Otherwise, it's not really about South Boston.
One of the interesting things here is that these characters in some cases might as well be in different countries. For example, Estelle, you and Tate don't have any scenes together. And
no.
Yet you both are important characters in this play.
Yeah, it's funny.
I know.
Because you live in separate worlds.
Yeah.
We pass each other, though, backstage. And we give each other high five.
There is the phone call that happens.
That's true. But I was taken out of that scene.
Yes, remember that still.
Now, this is the second time, David, you've worked with Dan Sullivan.
Yeah.
Is it important to have some kind of past experience with people, or doesn't it really matter?
Yeah, I think it helps. I mean, certainly in this round, there was just an implicit understanding of each other, and we spoke the same language, and I felt much safer. You know, Rabbit Hole was the first time we had worked together, and I had to I knew Dan's work was incredibly successful in everything that I had seen, but I still had to figure out how we worked together, and I learned to trust him. And in this process, I mean, in Rabbit Hole too, I literally didn't have to say a single word in the rehearsal process because Dan was so spot on about the play and understood moment to moment exactly what was happening. And that's incredibly rare for a playwright to not have to speak up or at least pull the director aside during breaks and say, you know, I think this is actually what's going on there. I never had to do that. Dan is just so smart.
My guests are David Lindsay Abaire, whose latest play is Good People. Two of the stars are here as well, Tate Donovan and Estelle Parsons. And it is being performed at the Manhattan Theater Club at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So what about the Manhattan Theater Club? You've had a long relationship with them, much longer than you've had with Daniel Sullivan.
Yeah. Well, they produced my very first play, Footy Mirrors, in 1999, and this is my fifth play.
You were here on this show for that
play. For Footy Mirrors,
yeah. 10 years ago.
It was longer than that even, yeah. No, it's an incredibly valuable thing, an invaluable thing for a playwright to find a home that and a group of people that are going to support your work and allow your work to change. And they have never wavered in their support of me, and I'm incredibly
happy about
it. It's
extraordinary that, you know, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
But New York also is very rich in this sort of thing. We not only have MTC, we have the Public Theater, Lincoln Center Theater, other nonprofit theaters, the Roundabout.
Yeah, but I don't know if they really – well, Lincoln Center maybe – but I don't know if they nourish American playwrights from the beginning the way they did David and other people.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of playwrights hop around from theater to theater, yeah.
And put them together with people who are really going to be helpful and positive about their work. Don't you think so, David?
Yeah, no question. I feel like the luckiest playwright in New York for many reasons.
You are the luckiest playwright.
I am. I know.
Well, you know, luck is better than talent.
Well,
I'll take it however I can get it.
I'll tell you an exciting thing about Tate. He was a surrogate for Obama. When Obama couldn't get to small towns, they sent Tate to be Obama in the small towns in the campaign.
I would do my Obama imitation. I'm very good with accents, so no, I'm going to care. I did.
And Saturday Night Live doesn't know about this.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know why. Actually, you know, March 26th, a whole bunch of people from the Obama administration are coming up to see the play.
Yeah.
Now, what is your relationship with the Obama administration?
Oh, no, nothing. I just can't.
Later, we're talking about Guantanamo on the show, and maybe you can give me some insights into what's been going on in the thinking in the White House.
Well, when Barack calls me, and he does constantly.
To consult.
Yes, especially about Guantanamo.
Does he ever ask about line reads?
He went over the accent together.
Yeah, Obama's Boston accent is fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. He's the master. No, I just love the guy, and I campaigned for him, and I did whatever I could. I, you know, phone banked, and wasn't very glamorous, really, what I did.
But I assume that you have plans for when this show closes. Right now, it was extended, wasn't it? Before it opened?
Yes.
Until May 8th? Yep. Well, is that the definite end of the run?
No.
No, it's not.
By no means.
So,
but that doesn't mean you shouldn't buy your ticket now to go see it now.
Well, the interesting thing about the Samuel J. Friedman is most times in these kinds of situations, a play starts off off-Broadway or at the Public or some other place, you're starting off in a big Broadway house, a house that might very well have just opened a huge musical in the old days.
No, because they've made it smaller. It's only got 600 and something seats. So when MTC took it over, I mean, I think the Music Box where we did August has over 9. I think that's more or less.
I always thought of the Music Box as a small theater, yeah.
And this has only 6-something, so it's a little smaller than...
It's a great house for a play.
It's a wonderful house for a play, yeah. But I think they're probably jockeying with maybe another, you know, one of them, a transfer. Or what they told me was whether they could move their season so that we could continue at the Friedman.
Meanwhile, this will be here until... May 8th. Tate, aren't you going into a prequel of The Wizard of Oz? Or
oh, no, that's David. He's writing
I'm
that.
So confused here.
I would be lucky to have him.
You're doing a prequel?
And I'm just curious if I could hit you up for a job.
No, Tate, you'll be doing good people for the next 6 years. So you're employed. No, I'm writing a prequel to The Wizard of Oz called Oz the Great and Powerful that Sam Raimi is directing. And
I would have thought it was Alice in Wonderland because of the rabbit hole connection.
You know,
yes, ask him about those rabbits.
Hey, you know, we've got rabbits in this show, by the way. So if you're a fan of rabbits.
What is it with you and rabbits, David?
Well, look, the rabbits in the play are my mother used to make those crafted rabbits out of, little flower pots and styrofoam heads. So that's why there's no connection to the rabbit hole play, although people are desperate to make
that
connection.
But David made for each one of us for opening night one of those rabbits.
Play rabbits, yeah.
That look like us, our characters. The most wonderful thing. It took him a day to make each one, so he hasn't been writing much lately.
No, but, and only 3 of them are on eBay right now, so that's sweet.
Oh, God.
Thank you so much for being with us, Estelle Parsons, Tate Donovan, two of the cast members of this play, also Frances McDormand, Renee, Elise Goldsberry, Patrick Carroll, and Becky Ann Baker, all wonderful. And the play is David Lindsay Abaire's Good People, now at the Manhattan Theater Club at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater, which is at 261 West 47th Street, just off of 8th Avenue. Have I covered everything?
That was it. That's great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for being here.